There is trouble in paradise. The government parties have fallen out with each other.
Now, we're only a year and a half in government.
In
terms of this arrangement.
There's constant charge against me. Spin because he has no case against us when it comes to subs.
5 to 9.
My charge against him is he's obsessed with innuendo and conspiracy theories.
It's not good enough to just pass the buck. There is something rotten in the state of Denmark, and ultimately somebody has to bear responsibility.
Yeah, we're in the Houses of Parliament on national television.
Welcome again to RTE's Your Politics podcast. With me in our lovely new Doyle studio, Paul Cunningham, Mary Regan and Micheál Lehane. We can't avoid Brexit, of course. It's just the topic that's dominating every day, every hour, every minute. And we finally, Micheál, saw Boris's big plan.
Big plan, yeah. The question is, though, is it a serious plan despite the restraint and the diplomacy on the Irish side? At the same time, what Simon Coveney had to say and here in the Dáil just a few hours ago was fairly unflinching, saying if this is the plan as it stands, well, that doesn't form the basis for an agreement because of two problems. One, the veto it would give one party in Northern Ireland against the wishes of the majority. The second, those customs checks, which really does away with the idea of trying to have an invisible border. For those reasons, it runs into major difficulty. So where it seems to be at the moment is that the next step would be you get into discussions, but that's not quite negotiations. And then the final bit, can you get the basis of an agreement? So many jumps, and it just seems unlikely.
And Paul, I suppose the big question this weekend is, you know, Boris Johnson has spoken about this being a landing zone. It wasn't presented as a take it or leave it or offer. It was, you know, something we want to discuss with our friends. So the question is he seriously? Is this the beginning of a set of last minute talks, or is there some diplomatic past the parcel almost of no deal going on?
Well, there is a bit of a fog, and the build up to Boris Johnson's speech at the Conservative Party conference, it was being billed as a take it or leave it. And yet when he came to announce it, it wasn't as such. And when he was speaking in the Commons once again, he was playing on the fact that we've compromised and now it's up to our, as he continually calls them, our Irish and EU friends to do likewise. But obviously there's a time issue. The clock is ticking, the council, this is the summit of EU leaders and presidents that's supposed to happen on the 17th and 18th. It seems unbelievable that it would be possible to reach any form of agreement by then, which takes us back, as Micheál said, takes us back to the question of, if you can't do the deal by the time, what's going to happen? On the big word is extension. And is the UK going to request an extension? And it seems likely the EU would give it, but Boris Johnson has set himself against making any such request on the basis that the UK has to leave by the 31st. So how do you square that circle? There's still so many questions out there.
There are reports, various reports in the British media about, you know, the Cabinet Secretary could do it, or Parliament could do it, or the Supreme Court would do it. But we're still left, Mary, in this all this uncertainty. I suppose the betting would be at this stage on extension and election.
Yeah, I think the general consensus would be that this deal goes no way near addressing the well-versed, well-rehearsed and well-voiced so far concerns of Ireland and concerns of the EU. Some people would even have said that it is, you know, stitched up version of many proposals already floated by Theresa May's government and rejected by the EU. And Simon Coveney, you really didn't have to read between the lines in what he was saying in the Dáil. He was very clear, saying, you know, that there are two significant concerns that we have along these lines. So on that basis, I think the analysis which goes along the lines of this is all a bit of a bluff on Boris Johnson's part. It's just all his game to gear this towards a no deal and a general election. You know, you would have to see some merit in that analysis for those very reasons I outlined. And for that reason, then, I think it is, you know, a sensible course for the Irish government and the EU to say, not close the door on this negotiation, to leave it open and say, we are willing to talk further on this.
And indeed, we had this week, I suppose, the contrast between almost the love fest between the DUP and Boris Johnson at the Conservative Party conference. Compare that with the scathing reaction from many industry and other sources in Northern Ireland when they saw the detail of these proposals. And for a lot of people who would call themselves moderates in Northern Ireland, this uncertainty is even more head-wrecking than it is, you know, for us here sitting around this table. And we've been talking about the uncertainty, what this means for identity in Northern Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement and all the rest, with someone who was speaking at Féile an Phobail this year and has been making some really interesting comments. He's Michael Eames. He's a surgeon in Belfast, and you might know him as the son of the former Church of Ireland Archbishop Robin Eames. And here's his take on the current uncertainty.
Well, I think at the minute the basic underlying feeling is confusion, and if we talk about identity very quickly in this conversation, there's a significant lack of identity in the group of people that I would be friendly with and working with, in that in the past it was much clearer where we were coming from, where we were going and what we stood for, and now it's much more difficult. And we as a group would feel almost unloved and unwanted in this, in that nobody appears to be listening or wanting to hear what we want to say and get across. And certainly the current political voices aren't representing us. We would affiliate very much to the island of Ireland, and that we would see a progression towards that if the economics worked. But Brexit is probably pushing us to decisions and pushing others to decisions before I think it's, you know, we're mature enough to make those. And I think the big thing that Brexit has shown is that you can't force an item like this. You can't push it. You certainly can't go to an ill-informed electorate before you have at least a pathway laid out. And, I mean, recently things appear to be better focused and we appear to be moving to some form of Brexit deal. But that in itself is going to cause even more confusion. And we feel, you know, a lot of us feel when we chat at work and we chat to colleagues and patients or staff, other staff, you know, where is this actually getting us to? Are we going to end up in a better place, or are we just going to end up in decades more confusion? And the north of Ireland is trying to come out of decades of confusion, which led to obvious violence. So we're worried and concerned that the lack of direction and the lack of where we're actually trying to get to is a big problem. And there are bits of what are talked about that are obviously attractive. At one point it was attractive that Northern Ireland could be this sort of foot in every camp, almost like a Singapore or Hong Kong type old scenario, which would be very attractive to people in Northern Ireland. But then you would get Scotland getting upset, Wales, elsewhere, and that obviously wouldn't work. So whenever you dissect down these sound bites that come out from government, which sound initially quite nice, they're just not going to work. And we all know that we've enjoyed for so many years now free movement up and down from the north to south. We're all constantly in Dublin or Cork or up and down to Belfast with sport, with work, with everything. We don't want to lose that. And if there's any form of obstacle to that, whether that's checking at the border or 10 miles north and south of the border or whatever, that's not going to work. And it's not going to be something that runs with the vast majority of people that I would speak to.
Are you also concerned that in this debate, which is all about, you know, customs and borders and what checks and where's, and very much it's ignoring the fact, I think Jonathan Powell, Tony Blair, who worked with Tony Blair on the Good Friday Agreement, makes this again and again. The Good Friday Agreement was about identity fundamentally more than goods and trade. And there's a majority in Northern Ireland, a majority on the island, that didn't want Brexit, and that there will be disruption and consequences that will flow from a border being reimposed, and essentially, do you fear that in a way the Good Friday Agreement is being, that settlement is being torn up?
I don't think it's being torn up. I think it's too important, and at the end of the day it has made such a change to our lifestyles that it can't afford to go. I think what it's a far bigger impact, and this is being ignored constantly. You know, a lot of my patients, a lot of my neighbours are farmers. We treat fishermen. We treat all the core industry of Northern Ireland. We don't make big ships anymore. We don't produce vast IT. You know, the core employment and the core thing that Northern Ireland and Ireland as a whole does is agriculture and fisheries and communities like that. They're being ignored. And if we put any obstacle to that working, which is a vast trade at the minute, that is going to cripple the country. And when I say the country, I mean the island. I can't believe that the north will survive better than the south or vice versa in anything that's currently being talked about. And any obstacle, and I'm a bit of a, when I put my scientific hat on, being a surgeon, I've never seen any bit of IT that will cope with what they're currently saying. And to magically generate that within the next 3 weeks is just farcical. I mean, any piece of IT that would be required to do that should at least be modelled on something elsewhere in the world or be in such final production line that's been tested thoroughly. So to suddenly say in the next 3 weeks or even 18 months, we're going to have an IT solution to this, I just can't buy.
You've called on Dublin to be explicit about whether it wants Northern Ireland to be part of a new Ireland. Why?
Well, it goes back to what I said earlier about feeling wanted. We very much feel that it's clear that the UK government or the London government use Northern Ireland as a tool when they want to and ignore us when they don't.
And just to cut in there, Michael, sorry, but yeah. Just for clarity, when you say we, you're speaking about moderate unionists there, is that
well,
right?
Well, I'm speaking about, I would even drop the unionist terms because at work we are talking about people who would vote for nationalists or unionists historically, but would struggle now to find somebody who affiliates very well with what they would like to vote with. It would be a middle class type population who have similar identities and affinities, but slightly variations in how they've got to there, in where they've come from a different schooling background or a different family background. But basically, we're all ending up in the same place. And at work, I have far stronger feeling, in inverted commas, nationalist friends who would resist a United Ireland or an All-Ireland solution way more than myself or historically would have been called unionist people, because they see that they might be in a far better financial place now than they would be in an All-Ireland situation, and the aspirations of a political All-Ireland are way down their agenda. So it's the unionist nationalist really is not talked about very much at mm-hmm. work or in colleagues or in patients that I would be talking to and seeing on a daily basis. No.
Because one of the arguments that is put up, for instance, against Sinn Féin and their call for a border poll is that, yeah. You know, if Dublin, you know, were to start calling for border polls or to start talking about New Ireland and the role of people in Northern Ireland within a New Ireland, that could increase, you know, the Brexit-type binary divisions in society. What would your response to that be?
I think currently it showed exactly if a border poll was to come up in the next few weeks, it would be a disaster because it would absolutely split the population without adequate knowledge and information as to where we need to go. So a border poll, in my eyes, should only come when we have a clear view of where we're trying to get to. And that's what brings us back to what you asked me just before about what I said at the fail in Belfast about the Taoiseach. In my view, and I think he has started to do that conversation, needs to start to push about where the Irish side of this wants to get us to and wants to include us or not. Because I think a large number of people similar to myself would then go, well, if the London government is really treating us this badly, then we have a future that we can actually talk to and develop and push forward. So if I give you an exact example at the minute, It's farcical to think that the north of Ireland is being treated the same as the United Kingdom. In my job, if you come to me with a certain shoulder condition, you will wait 3.5 years to have treatment. And I was speaking to colleagues last night from Liverpool. They will wait 6 weeks. And we are in the same United Kingdom NHS. And purely because of where we are, it has been let drift, and we have nobody to deal with and to talk to try to make that better. So there isn't a United Kingdom at the minute. We are not being treated equally. We are being let go. So we would like to hear from Dublin, well, this is potentially where we can get everybody to. And I think a lot of my colleagues would grab that.
One final question. There still, of course, is no government instalment for Northern Ireland after nearly 2 years now. And there are many who believe that at this stage it's not coming back. What's your view on that?
No, there's no sign it's going to come back, and that would be a very frightening part of the proposal currently on the table about Brexit, that the Assembly would have some form of control about whether Northern Ireland remained or in alignment or not with the EU. That I would be not very happy about, the local Assembly being given that power. I think we need a better line, and I think Northern Ireland is too small for the power that's been given. We're only bigger than a county in other parts of the world. So I think a better defined Ireland forum situation government would be better.
Michael, I hope we get to talk again. It's been a pleasure to talk to you this time, and thank you for speaking to us. It really is important, I think, to get you know, a sense of the diversity that really is there on the ground, and that's not often reflected in the political debates we're hearing.
Thank you very much.
I'm struck by that question that Michael Eames is asking of Dublin, where the Irish side wants to get us to, because whatever happens with Brexit, things are changed, whether they're changed utterly or not, we don't know. But that is a key question for Dublin, isn't it?
It is, and it's a question they've been really slow to come to. If you think back when they're looking to the future and things that might happen, and they do this thing called the risk assessment analysis every year, and there had to be a major push on from the chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, Sean Fleming, and Fianna Fáil Senator Mark Daly, to get the Irish side to even begin to look at the possibility if there were a border poll or if something were to change in the aftermath of Brexit around that. And I remember having a conversation with a fairly high level in government about this last year, about would there be any discussions, would there be any document floating around anywhere in government about that? And the message was clear, something like that would never be written down and it wouldn't really even be spoken about. So it's only now, kind of at the 11th hour when this thing comes into sight, that thoughts are beginning to go in that direction. And you did have that report as well, commissioned by Mark Daly in the last few weeks, which talked about unionist fears in the event of a border poll. And they're stark, things like retribution, even land being taken back. That kind of fear exists within the unionist community about these kind of questions. And when you look at where that's at, a reluctance on the government side here to make small steps and to even look in that direction. And then in contrast to Sinn Féin, who say, well, if you have a hard deal Brexit, no border checks, and immediately, rapidly make your way towards preparing for that border poll.
And interesting as well, the question as well for many in the nationalist community, particularly those who are prospering in Northern Ireland, the economic arguments about an all-island solution, a new island.
Yeah, there's certain benefits for living in Northern Ireland. Take healthcare and people going to their GP and being charged 50, 60, 70, 75. And if you happen to be living in Belfast, no problem. So there are benefits being in Northern Ireland, which are not going to be reflected here in the Republic. And if that change comes, then you're going to have question marks over it. I do think that the Taoiseach will point to the fact that he has spoken towards the nationalist population and saying they'll never be left behind again, that the government in Dublin will be representing them in the context of these all Ireland, in other words, Ireland and Britain as well. But what there hasn't been is that vision moving forward beyond that. And I think that's an issue.
All right. And of course, Brexit, Mary, hanging over the budget preparations.
Yeah, I mean, you'd barely know that there's a budget coming up next week. You know, usually there's this big drama in the build up to the budget, kite flying and floating of ideas. I think ministers have been keen to point out that there won't be any drama in this budget. However, I do think it will be, let's say, you know, the opening scene of the couple of months running to potentially a general election at some point next year. So while there may be no big giveaways, I think it will be a budget with an eye on a future general election.
So lots of signalling, even if there's not going to be much dramatic. What will you be keeping an eye out for, Micheál?
Yeah, I suppose the overall message that will be perhaps beneficial to the government. They don't have a lot of money anyway, but that can help the Fine Gael, we are good with the money argument if they can keep the discipline around it. I suppose you will look to the carbon tax. That's going to be the big item. Will it be the €10 or will it fall some way well short of that as expected per tonne? That's something. What will that money be used for? What section of it will go towards dealing with fuel poverty? They're kind of the big items. And then you look to social welfare, where it doesn't appear there is as much money to spend at all this time. So therefore, the €5 across the board increase. Is that something, despite the push from Willie O'Dea and Fianna Fáil, something that perhaps at this point looks unlikely to happen?
And interesting. The question I was discussing with an economic journalist actually today. Yeah, I know. but they were like a lot of talk about, you know, there'll be extra measures if we have to deal with a no deal Brexit in the event of Brexit. But what monies, on what terms, and who will be distributing what aid? Well, that could turn into a political hot potato, couldn't it?
Absolutely. I think the fact that once there's a no deal, I think politics will come back with a vengeance. It'll come back really quickly. The government has got proposals and they were set out in the summer statement, and it was going to be borrowing big to try and, you know, take account of the fact that 80,000 people could be losing their job in a short space of time. But if you look at the budget proposals, and I agree with Mary on this, if you look at the budget proposals, each of the parties has got a different way of dealing with the Brexit conundrum. And so once the government starts to advance its plans, you're going to find that chamber springing to life, where up to now all the energy has been sucked out of it.
I think the carbon tax, you know, will be a very tricky balancing act for them, because if there's any section out there who feels that they're disproportionately being asked to pay for this, you know, that is a potential banana skin.
Electric cars, will we get any big major announcements on green initiatives like that, Michal, do you think?
That's an important one. And of course, like, the political risk, despite if a carbon tax does impact on rural areas, the government probably can't face into an election without having been seen to do something in that area, given all the talk. And then will you roll over the current incentives that are there financially for electric cars? That would seem that is likely to happen.
I mean, suppose one of the other things to look out for will be corporation tax. We just saw this week the corporation tax is doing rather well. So how is the government going to spend it? Is it going to be day-to-day spending? Is it going to be for a special reason? Is it going to go into a special fund? That's going to be key, because it does seem that the Finance Minister, Pascal Donoghue, is listening to what the Irish Fiscal Council is saying, and they've got very clear advice about what should be done. So is he prepared to stand up them and do something else?
And Mary, we can presume that one of the arguments on Budget Day is whether this budget in itself is going to be enough with all the uncertainty ahead, whether we're going to need a supplementary budget, for instance, for 2020.
Yeah, that is an argument, and it might be one for another day. But I think that, you know, while yes, they have to keep it Brexit focused, you know, they'll know that people at home will be looking at, well, you know, what it means for them at the end of the day.
They're going to bank on the fact that there'll be a huge amount of money ready to borrow that they can do if there is a no deal, and in the hope that will prevent a supplementary budget and all the signals that would send.
Yeah. Come here to me. I want to talk about one of the best rows of the week. What's the story with Wolves?
That's Michal now, Wolfman.
out of nowhere, this political question that no one had expected was asked rhetorically by Eamon Ryan the last day when talking about that party's motion to try and increase and improve woodlands across the country. He asked the big question, which no one had asked of him, saying, would I reintroduce wolves as part of rewilding? And he said, yes, he would. And of course, it has been done in other places. Yellowstone in the US, a place where it completely reversed many of the negative ecological problems there. And you suddenly saw right down to the very bottom level that animals and certain things started to reappear.
Plants as well, because you were getting the proper all kinds of other creatures were able to come back because you had this proper ecosystem
going. Right down to the beavers building dams in the rivers. But what about the farmer in rural Ireland who's trying to guard his sheep, who would be on a commonage area, and the idea perhaps of wolves arriving there may not be greeted very well. Actually, this question, not quite as alien as you might think, because 2 years back on the Marion Finucane show, Michael Healy-Ray, when talking about rhododendrons and deer and problems in Killarney, said the ultimate question would be, could you reintroduce deer? And not surprisingly, he didn't embrace the notion at that point. But Eamon Ryan going in a different direction.
But one of the points that was made to me, because certainly this is one of the arguments, not just in Leinster House, I think people all over the country have been getting exercised about this one, but people saying it's all very well, Yellowstone, you know, that's huge. It doesn't have roads like, you know, you get in Kerry, and you know, farms there with people, sheep and so on. So it's just not practical in Ireland. And you can really see this one touched a nerve, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a bit of one of these kind of touchstone issues of divisions between the, you know, rural and urban. Yeah, you know, I can't see this idea of getting any traction whatsoever in most of rural
farmers for that one.
Definitely
nope.
Not.
And the other thing is, you know, wolves expect certain types of forests. I'm not sure that the huge plantations which we have been running for our sawmills are necessarily the
but
ones that are going to be
Green's
good.
But you're going to get all the farmers planting hectares of forests on their lands.
Well,
and
Mr. Bruton was talking about only afforestation policy this week.
It's very interesting, you know, there was a philosophy lecturer in UCC a few years back called Mark Rowland, who went down to write a book called The Philosopher and the Wolf, who had a wolf in Cork as a pet who was masquerading as a dog and used to attend philosophy lectures there and the like.
Is this true?
This is all completely true. So there was a wolf living in Cork for many years in the late 90s, I think.
Just one last point.
No, stop. I don't think we can say anything more after that. You can't trump that, can you?
Maybe not.
No, you can't. Okay, we'll leave it there for this week. If you like the podcast, please subscribe. I can't even speak after this. If you liked the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. Also tune in to Brexit Republic with the Scooptastic Tony Connolly and Colm O'Mungon. Thanks to Jack Good on production. I can't promise you wolf stories next week, but we will have the budget. So talk to you then. Bye.